Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, happy freaking New Year. Welcome to the Daily Jungle and welcome to a new era of the Jim Rome Show. That's right. We are live on your TV set on CBS Sports Network, and we had a hell of a first day. So much to talk about. That amazing Rose Bowl, Alabama smashing Clemson and playing like an absolute bully as well. The Browns finishing off their perfect season, and the Bills punching their first ticket to the postseason in 17 years. We covered all of it. Three great guests as well. Jason Lockenfora got things started. Yogi Roth was live in studio, and the Bills' Lorenzo Alexander finished the whole thing off. So much to get to, so Alvy, roll this thing. The Daily Jungle starts right now. Welcome to the jungle. Happy freaking New Year. Welcome to 2018. Now, to those of you who aren't just listening but are watching, yes, I said, watching the program for the first time, welcome to a huge, huge day in jungle history. Now, this is a day that we've been counting down for a long, long time. I mean, literally years. No lie, we have been thinking about this and talking about this maybe for a decade. Now, I always knew that we would get to this at some point, but I wanted to make sure that before we did this, we had the proper rollout. I was not going to do it before we had the right TV partner for it, and now we do. CBS Sports Network. You see, this is the very first time, besides the last few Super Bowls, that I have pulled back the curtain on this show. You can call me late to the party if you want, but I would tell you, I didn't want to be at that party. Not yet. It had to be the right time and the right partner for me to want to do this. Because if I was going to turn the cameras on the jungle after all this time, I want to make sure that I rolled it out the right way. And CBS Sports Network has done an amazing job of building a space worthy of filming every single day. I hope you have a chance to see what this thing looks like right now. Now, there is a ton to get to today. You've got Oklahoma and Georgia getting after it in a Rose Bowl for the ages. And no sooner than that game ended, the entire world got in line to crack on Baker Mayfield. Listen, I don't need to see this cat grabbing at his junk on the field or getting into drunken brawls off the field, but let me say this. This dude is competitive as hell. He is one of the best college quarterbacks I've ever seen. This is a guy that I want on my side. He just has to know that when you run your mouth the way he runs his mouth, what goes around comes around. And if he didn't know it before last night, I guarantee he does right now. Also, Alabama slapped Clemson. The Browns handled their business, manning down and finishing their perfect 0-16 season. In fact, they didn't just finish, they finished like bosses. 0-16 has never looked or felt so glorious, even if it should be 0-32. The Bills, as I mentioned, snapped the longest postseason drought in all of sports, and the Bills Mafia has got to still be raging right now. And for whatever reason, Raiders owner Mark Davis is obsessed. I mean, obsessed with a guy who hasn't coached in nearly a decade, a dude that his old man traded only to see him win a Super Bowl someplace else. In fact, the guy's so obsessed, he's reportedly willing to chip John Gruden off a piece of ownership, which makes no sense to me. So I've got all of that. Nice, Alvy. I've got all of that, and I was off this past week, so you know I'm locked, and I'm loaded, and I'm ready to go all in on all of those things. But I do have to say once again how pumped I am to be right here. I mean, it's one thing to welcome in, you know, a new affiliate to the fold, but rare is the day where you get to say what's cracking to an entirely new TV audience. And one more point's got to be made on that. One more point has to be made. This is going to be a blast. We're going to get after it, but this is an opportunity that comes at a time where this industry has never been more volatile than it is right now. So I want to make sure off the very top that I say thank you to CBS Sports Network. Thank you to CBS Sports Radio for believing in me and believing in this show. Your loyalty and your excitement mean everything to all of us and the XR4TI. And even to the clones. Speaking of which, clones. Listen, there are a lot of possibilities of what we can now do with this show. We can do a lot of different things now that we're on the TV side, and we plan on taking advantage of these things, including getting you, the clones, involved graphically. Now listen, we're building a clone directory, so when you interact with this show, you'll see your name and your avatar on TV as well. It's definitely something that you're all going to want to check out, which leads me to this. Over the next few months, I'm going to pound this information because it's very important. Maybe you're listening right now and you have no idea how to find the TV show. The network is CBS Sports Network. If you're on DirecTV, the channel is 221. If you're on Dish, it's channel 158. If you're on cable or Fios or Uverse, or you're streaming a service like Hulu or YouTube TV, you can find your channel at cbssportsnetwork.com or simply go to cbssportsnetwork.com and enter your zip code into the channel finder box at the very top right of the homepage. It is easy. It is quick. That's how you do it. If you're still struggling with that, you need some help, hit us up. You know where to find me. You can call. You can tweet. You can email. I will make sure you find your way to the network. So this is it. Here we are. And as much as I hate that new year, new me bag, I can definitely get down with this new year, new us, because this simulcast is all about us. It's about the brand that we have built together. Couldn't have done it without you clones. Can't go forward without you clones. I want you to be a part of this thing. Austin Huff on TV for the first time. What's up, bro?
What's up?
There you go. See how it is? Listen, the radio show's the radio show. The jungle is the jungle. I would never, ever compromise the jungle. I'm going to be true to you clones. So until you find a way to find this TV show, understand you're still going to get the same exact radio program, except it's going to be better because it's on TV right now. Hit me up. Telephone number is toll-free, 1-800-636-8686. Follow me on Twitter, at Jim Rome. In fact, I've got some thoughts on that, too. You should shoot your pics of yourself checking out the show on TV and then tweet them at me. I'll lay it out for you a little bit later on. And again, you can email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at habitate.com. You might wonder why I name-checked Austin, because he brought me in the very first email of 2018. It's going to set the tone. The first email of 2018 reads, Van Smack. Ah, hell yes. Happy New Year. Congrats on the jungle being on my freaking TV. See ya, Mickey Mouse Clubhouse. My two-year-old son will have to get his jungle on now. 2018 is already shaping up to be a bad-ass year. Signed, Southside Mike in Chicago. War Alvey saying, dude, no. Over and over as the makeup brush tickles his grill. Did you see that on Twitter? Alvey got makeup. Alvey was in that chair before I was. So look for Alvey on TV as well. All right, should I take that first call? Should I take the first call of 2018? Because it's going to set the tone. Let's see, 1-800-636-8686. Let's go to Boise. Dave in Boise, the first ever phone call on the simulcast of the Jim Rome Show. Dave, Happy New Year. What's going on? How are you?
Hey, Mr. Rome. I've been doing better, brother. My Browns broke my heart. We all seen the 0-16 coming, but... You know, I guess we get to have our parade now.
Yeah, in fact, you should go get ready for that parade right now. All right, Dave, thank you very much. Hey, listen, I'm not here to pile on Cleveland. You know I love Cleveland. I love that town. I love that city. I love the fans there. But I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I'm not happy that they went 0-16. It's a glorious thing. Do you have any idea how hard it is to run the table backwards? I mean, 16-0 is cool. It's just not nearly as cool as 0-16. And the way they did it makes it best of all. In fact, I don't want to jam that take in right now. I just want to say it's glorious. They did what they had to do. They manned down. And absolutely positively, when they needed somebody to make a play, they couldn't get it. I mean, that was a winnable game. You're going up against Pittsburgh's third string. They've got nothing to play for. They're trying to get off the field without anybody getting hurt badly. They didn't care. They had nothing to play for. You had everything to play for, and you still found a way to man down and lose. It was beautiful. The future is bright, but if they had choked again at the very end, I'm not sure that's something I ever get over. But they did what they had to do. Now, you ask me, there's going to be an asterisk. There is always going to be an asterisk on that 0-16 season, because 0-16 should be 0-32. So there'll be an asterisk, but they did do it. Let's go to Boca Raton. Joey in Boca. Joey, good morning. What's up?
Van Smack. Appreciate the vine, bro.
What's going on with you, Joey?
Let you know that I called in sick. Stay home and watch the show today on TV.
All right, then. I like it. How's it look?
It looks great. I mean, you look great. You know, it's going to be tough to not come with the personal, the show fodder.
No, that's not it.
No.
Thanks,
did you stay at home to watch me, or did you stay at home to get blasted? What's going on, man?
A very good call.
It's going to be hard not to come with the personal fodder. You mean it's going to be hard to participate on this program without talking about how people look since we're now on TV? Yeah, I know it's going to be hard. It was hard before I was on TV. Get through it. Work through it. Man, it's just too lazy. And I'm not in seventh grade anymore. Personal appearances are not show fodder. Unless it relates to an athlete being out of shape who is hurting himself and his team, I don't want to hear about how fat you think somebody is. It's neither here nor there. I mean, grow up. It's like anytime any celebrity or public figure or athlete gains 3 pounds, you clones are all over them. Yeah, because you're all perfectly ripped and swole. You're all rocking 4% body fat. Listen, I understand that when you crack on other people, it makes you feel better about you. Just know, the rule hasn't changed. The studio has. We're on TV right now, but the show is still the show. You had your one shot with Romageddon. Then you got to talk about personal appearances all you want. That was then, this is now, we're not doing it anymore. So don't call me up and tell me how hard it's going to be that, hey, Rome, you're on TV. What are we supposed to do? What you're supposed to always do. Give me a take that doesn't suck and talk some sports. So far, so bad on the phones. 1-800-636-8686. But to be fair to all you clones, me moving into a nice, shiny new studio and having this thing on TV doesn't mean that your calls are going to be good all of a sudden. I understand that. Remember, this is a show where we don't take a ton of phone calls. I can go on for takes and takes and takes. But I'm looking for a way to get you involved. You have your phone number. I've got Jason Lockenfora coming up in a few moments. Yogi Roth is going to be in studio next hour to talk about the semifinal matchups and also look ahead to the college football national championship. And Buffalo Bills linebacker Lorenzo Alexander is coming up as well. Let's get one more phone call in here before the break. Let's go to Wisconsin. Cliff in Wisco. It's good to have you on the show, Cliff.
That, Jim? I'm a diehard Raider fan, and I'm just trying to figure out what Mark Davis is trying to do here with this potential Gruden hiring.
So you want me to help you with that? Your name is Cliff, right?
Yeah, that's correct, but they call me the Red Dog.
Oh, really?
That's not a good call.
Because no. We just call you Cliff.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call.
So you're probably wondering what that was all about. Did you hear me say to him, now wait a minute, let me just confirm this. Your name is Cliff, right? He said, yes, but they call me the Red Dog. No, they don't. Or they might, but we don't. Another rule. It's like, I think the show has maybe 4 rules, and all of them have been broken already to start 2018. Hey, Avi, I don't know if you're caught up to date, and you've got your fraternity of people who have broken that rule. If you're new to it, you're not allowed to self-gloss. You cannot self-gloss. I don't really care what your boys call you. I don't care what your fraternity called you back in the day. Until you earn that gloss here, you're just Cliff. Cliff and Wisco, not Red Dog. No self-glossing. That's why he got run off. No self-glossing. If you end up with a handle or a nickname, it's because the show bestows it upon you. Hey, but don't feel bad, Cliff. Like I said, you're not the first, you're not the last. It is now a very elite fraternity. It's got probably a few dozen. Believe me, you're not the only guy who's made that mistake.
Levi the Trash Man.
Ah! It's Iceman.
Ah! Lonnie Carter in Spokane.
Ah! The Axe.
Ah! Bighorn from Windsor, Ontario.
Ah! They call me the Bowling Ball here in Tampa.
Ah! Jay Dizzle.
Ah! Manny Cheeseburger over here.
Ah! Oh, my name is Shaq Collins.
Ah! The Clone Prophet.
Ah! This is the Grump.
Ah! This is the Grouch.
Ah! Moldoggy in NorCal, East Bay to be exact.
Ah! The Dougler. I'm from the city of Fad Diets and Yoga Pants.
Ah! The Zookeeper.
Oh, good gloss. Where did that come from?
At a buddy's wedding.
Ah! So you gotta call me Roaster.
Ah!
Actually, this is Garbage Man, Brad.
Ah! Not Jonathan, it's Jip.
Ah! My boys call me the Cracker Jack.
Ah! G-Money.
Ah! Actually, they call me Sexy Rexy from New Mexico.
Ah! That's correct, but they call me the Red Dog.
Oh, really?
That's not a good call.
That club is getting bigger and bigger. Still elite, but getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Jason Lockenfora is my guest. JLC, Happy New Year, brother. How are you?
Jim, Happy New Year, man. I'm honored. I'm honored. I wish we could have done this on camera. I think there were some technical difficulties with my little setup in the basement, but hopefully we rectify that in the future. And I didn't know what the dress code was, too. If I was on camera, I wasn't sure
You know what I mean? What to wear? It's TV, but, you know, I don't know. Would a ratty old Bad Brains t-shirt have sufficed?
That'd
would
be
you
kick
me to the curb? How
yeah,
would
that'd
that
be perfect.
Gone?
In fact, we don't even need to do this. We can wait until we get on camera so you can rock that gear. Jason, you know this. I mentioned this a few weeks back when somebody said to me, hey, Rome, who are the best-dressed guys on the NFL on CBS? I said, I don't want to get on the wrong side of anybody at all, but it's clearly me and JLC. So I'm not worried about that. Listen, okay. Now, because you are based in Baltimore, this might be kind of a tough thing. You've covered the league a long, long time. So what was your reaction when you saw Andy Dalton hit Tyler Boyd up top for that 49-yard TD that proved to be the game winner that knocked out the Ravens and put the Bills in for the first time in 17 years?
A shocking ending, but the result itself didn't shock me. I saw that spread, you know, Bengals getting 10 points, and I know Vegas is smarter than me on these things, but that always looked like a busted line to me. On my local podcast here, I talk quite a bit about how I thought this was going to be a difficult game for the Ravens. I picked the Ravens to win sort of begrudgingly, maybe on the last second Justin Tucker field goal, but I thought it would come down to the last second, and I thought that the Bengals would find some joy against their secondary. If you look at what wide receivers had done most of the final 6 weeks of the year, I know the Ravens get a lot of accolades for their defense, but I mean, Davante Adams shredded them. Antonio Brown absolutely shredded them. I mean, people have been going off every week. Hilton had done nothing all year, 6 catches for 100 yards. Every week somebody was averaging more or less 18-plus per catch. It turned out to be Boyd in that big play at the end this week and not A.J. But they're not a very good football team. And there's a lot of not very good football teams in the AFC, which kind of the schedule kept them in it till the end. But, I mean, last in the league in yards per attempt on offense through the air. Gave up the fifth most big plays on defense the last 8 weeks of the year. And when T-Sizzle can't bring it every single down with the pass rush, they struggle. He had only a half sack in December. The pass rush went down, secondary not good, and now they're watching the playoffs as their owner mulls potential changes.
Jason Lockenfora joining us. He is our first guest on our first simulcast. Yeah, as you point out, there are a lot of teams in the AFC that aren't very good, and one that was especially horrible. I mean, lost in the excitement of teams like Buffalo busting on through and making the playoffs, the Browns, Jason, did manage to cap off their perfect 0-16 season by losing to the Steelers' backups. What do you make of then the situation in Cleveland and how the organization has handled the fallout from this year?
That's Planet Haslam, Jim. I don't speak the language on that planet. I don't know the customs. I don't understand anything that really goes on there. That's, you know, they used to say there's 31 NFL teams and then the Oakland Raiders. Well, you could put the Cleveland Browns in that boat. Now, that's football Siberia. How you get worse from 1-15 is impossible, right? This league is set up for everybody to go between 6-10 and 10-6. To get worse from 1-15, to be an offensive coach who didn't help the offense develop, who refused to go with the run game, which was their strength, who hung a young quarterback out to dry week in and week out, who didn't develop the young tight end in Njoku. They drafted so many wide receivers there, Coleman's dropping the ball at the end. It makes no sense anywhere in the world other than, I guess, on Planet Haslam.
JLC, my guest. Then what about Hugh Jackson? What kind of a message, Jason, does that send the Browns fans that they're not going to make a move with this guy, that he's coming back for another year?
Well, and even just some of the comments he made. I mean, you would think if you survived 1-31, you might be a little bit sheepish, maybe kind of keep your comments to a minimum, not very braggadocious, not making comments that are going to garner a lot of attention. He's going the opposite route, and this is what I guess Jimmy Haslam wants. I think they'll speak when the season ticket renewals go out. They'll speak with their wallets. Tons of empty seats there. I mean, some weeks it looked like more empty seats than actually, you know, seats that had a human body in them.
Sure.
And I expect that to continue to be the case. And the real question is, I mean, the fans, they've been beaten to submission there by mismanagement. What's going to happen to whichever quarterback gets thrown in that situation next year, where Hugh Jackson comes in September on the hottest hot seat in NFL history, and he's going to do whatever he has to do to try to win a game to make this streak go away, and that may lead to him playing a quarterback well before he should, like he did last year, or quickly going from one to the other, whatever it takes to try to find some elixir to finally win? That's not good for short or long-term development. I don't know why you would thrust such a prize jewel, whoever they're going to take with the first overall pick, into that, but the GM's hands are tied. John Dorsey, he's got to live with this. And this all reflects completely on the owner.
Yeah, why? Because they're the Browns. And normally I would say, why does anybody do anything? Because they can. But why do the Browns do these things? Because they're the Browns. All right, now we talked about the AFC. Jason, let's go over to the NFC for a minute. Philadelphia is obviously the top seed, but they're coming off that 6-0 loss to Dallas, another game where Nick Foles did not look good at all. Mm-mm. How concerned would you be if you're an Eagles fan?
Extremely. I would be fretting the better part of the next couple of weeks until they take the field again. I mean, I know it was only a quarter, but, I mean, it was bad.
It was a bad quarter.
Snaps, you know, throwing balls directly into the ground, missing people, putting balls up for grabs, no sense of confidence, no sense of command or authority of that offense, no tangible direction. And that's coming off the week prior where it was more of the same. There is no substitute for Carson Wentz. Next man up might apply, you know, with your right guard or maybe your strong safety. It doesn't apply at quarterback, not when you're talking about what was the NFL's best team most of the season, who had a second-year player who was going to win the MVP award. I mean, Nick Foles may be functional occasionally, but I never bought the idea, and we may have talked about this at the time, that we're just going to keep doing what we're doing and put Nick Foles in. Really? You're going to keep those RPOs in there. You're going to keep the quarterback out of the pocket and moving, booting him out and having him hold, you know, run with the ball and play like a line. Really? Because that's not Nick Foles. And Nick Foles doesn't have the arm of Carson Wentz. He doesn't have the physical traits of Carson Wentz. And I think it's going to be a very short playoff stint because, unfortunately for the Eagles, the NFC is quite deep this year.
See, the thing is, Jason, we had this very conversation. The last time I saw you and the fellas in New York for the NFL on CBS, I did a rant on that very topic. Eagle fan didn't like it. They were pissed. But my point was, this guy is not Carson Wentz, and you can't ask him to do the things that you ask of Carson Wentz. And I said at that time, if you're asking me who I'm going to take, Philadelphia or the field in the NFC. Foles or the field, I'm going to take the field, and I haven't seen anything since then that would get me to think otherwise. Let me ask you about Black Monday. Yesterday was Black Monday in coaching circles. It included the news that the Raiders had fired Jack Del Rio. First, let me get your reaction to that.
Well, I mean, there was only one way that Mark Davis was going to eat $20-odd million left on Jack Del Rio's contract, which he just gave to him a few months back after Jack Del Rio was, in some people's estimation, the coach of the year last year. And that was because the guy he's been trying to move heaven and earth to get for the better part of 6 years is finally ready to leave the broadcast booth, and that's John Gruden. And he's been chasing him forever, and he's offered him whatever he possibly could in the past. But every time he ventured forth, you know, where in the world is John Gruden, meeting him at various undisclosed locations around the country, he never had an answer to the question, how do we compete with the big boys from a revenue standpoint? What's the end game with the stadium? Well, that question has been answered, and it's out there in the desert in Vegas. And now that all those sort of ducks are in a row, and Gruden's at a point in his life, in his career, in his home life with his youngest about to go into his senior year next year, where he's got the itch big time again. And, you know, I'd be stunned if this doesn't happen. The one caveat would be, you know, there's been times in the past where Mark Davis thought he had a deal agreed to with John, and he woke up a day later or 2 days later and said, I'm still not ready to jump back in. But as many coaches as he's talked to, as hard as he's been working to try to put this together, it's going to happen next week, Romy. This will happen.
The question is why? I mean, why? Jason, look, you're worth what anybody will pay you, but is this guy worth a piece of ownership? I mean,
well, I don't know about that. I don't think that's going to happen because I don't think the other owners, frankly, will allow that to happen. They don't want to open that Pandora's box and set that precedent. You know, this is a league where they try to protect themselves from spending too much, right? They're all about the salary cap and, oh, we'll franchise this guy so we don't have to give him, you know, $100 million guaranteed and no guaranteed salaries. So now the idea that, well, if I really want a guy bad enough, I'll just give him a piece of my team while he coaches it, I don't think that's going to fly. But it'll probably be $10 million a year. It'll be a record contract, and it will be where it's really going to be crazy is the assistants. Because this will be the highest, not just Gruden himself, but you're going to have probably record coordinator salaries. You're going to have record quarterback coach salaries. It will be incredibly highly paid staff. And that's just, you know, that's part of doing business with Gruden. He has that sort of cachet. He can demand everything and then some. But no, I don't believe. Now, look, down the road, could he get a piece of it? Sure. I mean, there's all kinds of wink-wink things that happen in this league. But as the head coach, I don't see the other owners allowing that to happen.
Jason Lockenfora joining me for a few more moments. Let me ask you about the Steelers. The playoffs get underway, but they've got a bye this weekend. So what does that mean in terms of Antonio Brown's availability? How close will he be to 100% when he hits the field again?
How close to 100%? I'm not positive, and they're not positive. But it's going to be close enough based on his progress the last week for him to give it a go. And knowing him, how they know him, once he gets on the field and once that adrenaline's rushing, he's going to give it 5,000% until or unless his body and that calf muscle gives out on him. So they're fully preparing to have him for the divisional round. He won't do much this week in terms of practice, but he's getting treatment at his house. He's getting treatment at the drive-thru at McDonald's if he happens to be venturing out. If he goes to the mall, he might be getting treatment on the mall between, you know, going to stores. He's all about being ready to play, and he'll be ready for that divisional playoff game.
Jason Lockenfora joining us for a few more moments. Let me ask you about the Falcons at the Rams, the second game on Saturday. Now, when you came out here and you spent some time with the Rams before the season, you came away obviously with a really good feeling about Sean McVay and how this season would go. But could you have ever imagined them winning the NFC West in his first season?
No, I'd be lying if I said that. You know, I still thought very highly of the Seahawks at the time, and they were my NFC Super Bowl pick. And I thought Russell Wilson would be flirting with an MVP and that the offensive line would have to be a little better and the run game would have to be a little better. And well, I was right on a couple of those counts, but not on enough. I'm surprised that I knew that he was a leader of men. I knew that he would fit into the role in a way that most people would never expect a 30-year-old to be able to. And I knew the offense would make gains. I just wasn't sure that all three phases would come together as quickly as they did. But I liked his staff a lot. I liked the off-season moves. But I thought, you know, boy, he's never done it before, and they haven't won, you know, anything of note in, 12 years since they were in St. Louis. I just think you have to kind of learn to walk before you sprint. And I thought they'd put the training wheels on this year, and then next year really would be the year where Goff took off, and 2018 would be a year to look out for the Rams. Well, they were 1 year ahead of schedule, and they are quite formidable. I don't know how it's going to shake out in the NFC because, again, I think, you know, the balance of power swings heavily out there. But it's already been a tremendous season, and you put another draft there, another off season of signings there, and another year of seasoning from McVay, and boy, the future is quite bright.
He is a Pac-12 football analyst. He is a filmmaker. He is a New York Times bestselling author. He is the host of the Life Without Limits podcast, host of the Season of Sam podcast with Sam Darnold, and again, our first in-studio guest on CBS Sports Network, Yogi Roth. Yogi, what's up, man? Happy New Year.
Dude, how great is this?
This is good.
This is awesome, man. And we were talking off air. I've grown up listening to your voice, you know, as a storyteller from the East Coast to come out here. It was so cool. I can remember walking through the streets of Pittsburgh in college and us trying to mimic you. You know,
right.
What would Rome say here? And now to be on your show is a gift, man. And congratulations. I mean, what a great example of diligence, hard work. You know, just incredible resolution, man.
You know, you're about those things. I want to get into resolution and your thoughts on that and your approach to it. But we got to talk some college ball. I mean, after the college football over the weekend, and in particular, Georgia-Oklahoma, there is no way that I can start this off by not asking you how great is ball.
It was great. I mean, last night was magical. I was going to go to the Rose Bowl, and I was like, no. I need to sit and watch these two. We'd just gotten off covering the Cotton and the Fiesta and came home. And that Rose Bowl was magic. And I don't know if you were there last year, but Penn State SC was epic. And I was part of four Rose Bowl appearances back in the day with Coach Carroll. And this one was special to watch, you know, Georgia come back and the resolute by that team. And you look at what Baker has and the attitude and the juice and all those things. To me, the back and forth side of that game was great. And you could feel it on TV, the crowd go. And if you've been there for an SEC game, it's a little different with those crowds and the Big 12 crowds because they don't have the Rose Bowl.
For sure.
And it was just awesome chanting their respective conferences' names and then just seeing how it went back and forth. And, of course, coming down to just a couple critical downs and distances, man, it was perfect.
I'll tell you what, I'm not sure that I've ever seen a Rose Bowl like that. I mean, that might have been the best Rose Bowl ever. When you see Oklahoma come out the way they did, I mean, just storming to start the game, and they're doing whatever they want, and they're making it look easy, what were the thoughts that you had watching them in the first half?
Well, I really think this one, you know, the bowl season compared to the regular season, it's two different worlds, right? So if you give any defensive-minded individual, especially, you know, a genius like Kirby Smart, a month to prepare for a wide-open system, a pseudo-air raid system, you think they usually, it's a big advantage to the defense because they understand route combinations, they understand the route tree, they understand what's going to happen offensively, the throwing lanes, and you can create finally the discipline around stopping that. Like in the NFL, you don't see a lot of the air raid stuff working all the time because they have so much time to work on spot drops and getting to certain specific locations. In college, guys are usually like a yard off, and that's why quarterbacks can find these windows. You're like, wow, how can they keep moving the ball? Well, a month to prepare or so, I thought Georgia would slow that offense down in the first half. And when they didn't, I was like, man, this might be a wrap because they've got a beat on them in terms of their tempo, where they're locating the ball in the vertical game. So to see them come back in the second half, man, I was like, major props to this defense for 18 to 22-year-old kids not breaking.
Hey, Yogi, by the way, what about that defense? I'm not going to lie. I thought that game was over. I should have never disrespected Georgia. But in terms of the adjustments they made, what do you think Kirby Smart told them at halftime? And was it a matter of them adjusting, or did they just slow down and play their game? Exactly what happened in the second half?
Well, I think a combination, right? When you play in those games, even when you coach in those games, it's just different. You take a minute, you look up at the crowd, you say, damn, this is the grand. I mean, it really is different. And no disrespect to other bowl games, but it's just very unique with the San Gabriels and da 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 da. So you got to settle in. But I thought they went and played a lot of man coverage in the second half, right, and made plays. They made plays on the ball. You know, and when you can do that, that's how you stop those types of offenses. You say, okay, we're going to disrupt your timing in a timing-based system. When you get the quarterback off his platform, you look at Baker. How many times did he throw with his feet set? I mean, he didn't do that a lot throughout the season, but when you're playing man coverage versus zone coverage, and in zone, he's going to have some windows. And, man, you got to make spot throws and throw guys open. And I thought the defense of UGA was electric in that regard. And then, of course, the pressure. They were bringing delayed blitzes at times, just coming from a couple different areas, just an extra guy. And their athletes are just unique. Roquan Smith, Exhibit A. I mean, dude was like a missile every time from that backer spot.
What about Smith? Is there anybody you would compare him to, and how do you think, or what did you make of the way he came through, especially late? I mean, this is what the great ones do, right? They show up when they need to, and they make plays. I thought the guy was absolutely incredible last night. What did you think about what you saw from him?
Well, you think back to some of the great linebackers in college, right? LeVar Arrington way back in the day. You can think of, like, Ray Maluga if you want to talk about guys on the West Coast. To me, he was like those guys from a physical standpoint, but he looked like a running back. You know, he had like running back eyes they talk about a lot, of just being able to understand where the ball's going, where the block's going. And he looked like Bryce Love, Christian McCaffrey, guys just shot out of a cannon. Saquon Barkley, whew, he'd be right there. And I loved that element of him. I mean, there was no guessing. There was no element of hesitancy with his game. When I watched that, as a Heisman voter, I said, man, I wish I voted for him. Because like he's clearly one of the top five players in the country. I would have loved to have seen him in New York.
Yogi Roth joining me in studio for our simulcast. Listen, I would have said going into that game, the last thing that you'd expect or want to see is Jake Fromm get caught up in a shootout with Baker Mayfield, but the kid is a true freshman, and I understand he's not your typical true freshman. He could not have handled his business to me on a bigger stage any better than he did. I mean, this is a really, really special guy. You've been around a lot of quarterbacks. What did you make of somebody that young showing up and playing the way he did on that big of a stage?
Surprisingly, wasn't surprised. Right. And I say that because, you know, I do the Elite 11, and you got to come this year because we're in Southern California. It's a blast. Last 19 years, you know, top high quarterbacks in the country. And when Jake came in, he had this element of the it factor. And I define the it factor as when you walk into the room, people can feel you and you make them better. And that's what he does. And it's beautiful. And we saw it and we talked about it, you know, Trent Dilfer and our staff. I'll never forget. It was late one night. We're in our little war room. We said, if he gets a chance, if Jacob Eason, if something happens,
right,
he's never going to look back. And not that it's, you know, Nostradamus type stuff, but you're like, there it goes. And there it happens. And I think from a game planning standpoint, you look at Notre Dame all the way to now, his first time really getting major PT to obviously the CFP, and the stage wasn't too big for him. And I didn't think he tried too hard. I mean, there's one throw he probably wished he had back with a little low across the middle. Sure. He climbs the pocket. But he didn't short arm it. He played the game within the system. And I think it deserves a ton of credit because it's easy to say, well, when you play in the first quarter, it's just football again. It's not on that stage.
Sure.
And it's not when you're at Georgia. And it's not when you're a freshman quarterback and that team hasn't won a natty in however long. I mean, it to me is monumental what he's done. And that program, they just signed Justin Fields.
Yep.
They might split time next year. And no one would have a problem with it because they're two NFL quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. They're going to be on that roster. So I'm blown away with his poise, the way that he operates, but not surprised how his teammates just have absolutely loved him.
Yogi Roth joining me in studio. So where does that leave us with Baker Mayfield? He goes down, no shortage of guys running across the field, telling him to humble himself, and things are worse than that. By the way, do you think that he should humble himself, or is this not what makes this guy great? This is the kind of fuel that he runs on. So is him humbling himself a good idea or a bad idea?
Well, it's a tough question. I mean, when you watch him from afar, you say, yeah, humble yourself, man. And then you dive into the psyche of, and I was a walk-on, and I remember getting a scholarship and playing, and you have to have a different chip. And he's not letting it go, because that's been his process since he was an Elite 11 tryout in Dallas with JT Barrett and Tyrone Swoops. And we didn't even look at him twice. I mean, if you looked at him, you wouldn't look at him twice either. I mean, he looks like your 12-year-old probably, right. You know, at that time in his career. But he had a belief in himself, and I think you have to have that now.
You were talking about when he walked in a room, did he have any of that it then that you were talking about?
We couldn't tell. Mm-hmm. You know, you just couldn't tell in a 2.5-hour workout. But when he walked into Texas Tech, he clearly did when he played his first year. You know, and obviously when he goes in Oklahoma, cold calls Coach Stoops and says, hey, I'd like to get a spot on the roster, and then goes and wins the Heisman. I just think that's one of the best stories in the history of the game, from walk-on to Heisman. You know, and we look at all the other stuff and take shots at him. And I'm the first one to say character is the biggest element of the definition of the Heisman Award, and I was extremely critical of him. But when you get around him, that chip, that swagger, I think it's really real. I don't think it's made up. A lot of times in college football, I think it's made up because your Instagram followers have made you up and your fan bases have made you up. This is how this guy's even survived in major college football. Now it's going to be fun as he makes the transition into the NFL, because I think he's got elements of Darnold and Trace McSorley. He clearly has a winner's pedigree. He's going to be comp to Russell Wilson and Drew Brees all day long. And it'll be really fun when he gets on a board of what he knows football-wise and the acumen compared to the league. And when he gets his shot, is he Russell? Is he Vernon Adams? I mean, it'll be a fun dialogue around him in the NFL, but if I was him on a team, he'd be a backup on my team in the NFL, and I'd love to see what he could do in the preseason.
Yogi Roth joins us. All right, so if I had to put you on the spot, Monday night, Georgia or Alabama, who do you like?
It's hard because, you know, my new thing now after watching these games is I just watch kickoff team, and it's like the funnest thing I could absolutely do, because you look at these teams run down, and the guy catches it at the 5, and he's hit at the 10.
Right.
And I watch Bama, and you look at the way they played defensively. I mean, they were suffocating. You know, and they played a good offense. They played a talented quarterback. Clearly, they're going to have to stop the run. The severity of the injuries that they sustained yesterday will be the biggest thing. So without knowing them right now, I'd go with Georgia. But if Alabama's healthy, I think they're a completely different team than what we saw in the season, which is a total other discussion, right? Like, is it teams throughout the season that are the best, or is it projection? And let's give them a month to get healthy. Let's get the top four teams in the playoff. I
mean, what is that? Is that what it was, a month to get healthy? Because that's the team that everybody was waiting on all year long, and you had to think, hey, they're just not that team. Not this year. And then they show up last night, and they pretty much are that team.
Yeah, they were impressed. Well, I think it's like the Boise State argument from back in the day. Same argument you can make now with Central Florida of, if you had to play conference teams week in and week out, who would you really be versus, hey, give me a month to prep. You know I'm brilliant. Nick Saban, defensive mastermind. Let me try to shut down an offense. And that's what they did. I mean, they were absolutely suffocating. So I think you can go back and forth all day in the argument, but you got to give them their props. And the SEC, they looked the part. You know, everywhere other than those two teams, they didn't. But, man, you have to give them major credit for the way they finished. So I wouldn't be shocked. If Alabama's healthy, I'd go with them. But if not, I think Jake Fromm will be the first true freshman since Oklahoma in the late 70s to win an Natty.
Yeah, again, a special, special guy. Not a very special season for the Pac-12 in the postseason. Let me ask you about your guy, Sam Darnold. He did not have the kind of game that he would have liked to have had against Ohio State. Knowing him as well as you do, how do you think he responds to it?
I think he's fine. I mean, I talked to him right after the game. I was in the locker room. We covered the game on the Pac-12 networks. I think a narrative that was trending all over the world, right, or at least all over the U.S., was against an NFL caliber defense, he couldn't do anything. Well, he didn't have an NFL caliber offensive line.
Hmm.
You know, he got sacked 8 times, but insert other quarterback, might get sacked 14 times. And some of the throws that he did make were magical. Now, the turnovers are going to be a concern. The fumbles specifically will be something that NFL teams look at if he chooses to opt out and go early. But his great is so much better. I think he completes throws that most guys wouldn't even attempt. And I just think he's dynamic. And then you dive into the character, the mindset of this guy as a competitor. I've been around him every week, all season long. I've known him since he was 16. He's big time, man. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if he decides to go early, if he's the number one draft pick. And I get people say, he's not ready. He needs more time.
Is he NFL ready?
I don't know who couldn't benefit from another year. I mean, and I think it's all situational, right? If Andrew Luck went, was he ready after his redshirt sophomore year? He could have, but he wanted the college experience. Marcus Mariota, same deal. Same deal. I think if he comes back, of course it's going to be better for him. Like I think it is for majority of players to come back. But he's got to look at it, and I'm into this narrative now. If I come back, how much better am I going to get within my system? Mm-hmm. You know, those are the questions that we don't know. We don't know what they're running. I know Clay runs, obviously, a pro-style system. If he comes back, they're going to be awesome next year. They pretty much return everybody other than their center for the most part on offense and a tight end. But I just think that he's done one of three things in terms of evaluating the NFL. Three things happen. 1 year, Deshaun Watson, you go, all right, 3 years, I'm in and I'm out and I'm getting my degree. 2 year, Josh Allen, and you say, oh, I'm playing, and all of a sudden, the day after the draft, next year's draft projection, they say I'm the number one draft pick. I'm fighting against that element of who I'm supposed to be all season long, or you're Sam. And he's shut it out up until the end of the Pac-12 title game. And then you start to talk to some people. And I think for him, his eyes have been widened to, whoa, I could be a top five draft. Whoa, the NFL is a real thing. Let me now talk to agents and go through that process. So I like the way he's done it, but it'll be interesting to see how he nets out.
Easy for me to say, but if you're holding a lottery ticket, you probably want to cash it, but is he holding that lottery ticket? I mean, if you're a top five pick, you got to come, right?
Yeah, I'll tell you
But how do you know?
I remember this in college like it was yesterday. Larry Fitzgerald was my roommate, and he left after his sophomore year because he went to prep school, so he was eligible for the draft. And he announced he was going to leave early. And right before his press conference, I went up to him and I said, why are you leaving? You promised your mom you get your degree. His mom had passed away earlier that season. And he said, you go to college to give yourself the best opportunity for whatever your profession is when college ends. I'm in the best situation I'll ever be. I'm going to be a top five draft pick. I need to leave. And that was when it clicked for me at 22 or whatever, 21, of yeah, that's what it has to be about. I think when you really look at all things considered and you have that situation. You have Leiner. I remember when Leiner came back, he said, everybody says I'm a top five pick, but it's my life. I have to live that life in the NFL, and I'm not ready for that. I don't want that now. And I think that's probably where Sam will net out, because there will be positives and negatives on both fronts.
I'm reaching down, Yogi, to pick up this blue ball. You brought me a gift. What does this ball represent?
Well, so that ball is called the One World Play Project ball, and I didn't ask you to bring that out. I appreciate that you did, man. But
hey, free as me. I like gifts.
But that ball represents the most resilient ball on the planet. You can't pop that ball. You can't shoot a gun at that ball. You can't saw that ball. You can't drive over that ball. And I'm with that organization, and the idea is if you buy a ball, they give a ball to a refugee community around the world, and it's the most resilient ball, and I'm gifting it out to the most resilient stories, the most resilient people or teams that I find around the globe. On my way to New Zealand in a couple days. I'm going to give a couple balls away. And coming down here for your show to survive, and you know this better than anybody, in this industry, as long as you've had, and to thrive and be literally the gold standard, you got to be resilient, man. You and your staff and everybody involved, it's just badass, and I'm pumped to be part of it.
I appreciate you very much saying that. Listen, you've always been about the right stuff. You're about persevering. You're about grinding through it all. If there's somebody listening right now who might be feeling a little bit down or a little bit flat, like the New Year's turned over and they're looking for that it and they don't have it, what kind of advice would you give them?
Yeah, that's really fun. I do this exercise a lot sometimes with when coaches get let go, and I talk to them a lot of the times. I have them write a letter, or I ask them to write a letter to somebody, whoever they'd like to be, that imaginary character, and say, dear so-and-so, hi, my name is Yogi. I grew up in this town. The first time I had my dream crush was this. The way I bounced back was here. And it's basically a letter to somebody introducing yourself, but also reintroducing yourself to your character traits, the resiliency that you may have, the grit that you showcased that you forgot that you gained when you were a sophomore in high school and you got cut from the basketball team, you became Michael Jordan. Those are that to me is one of the coolest things you could do in the new year, is get in touch with your story. And I've always felt as a broadcaster, is my only job is to celebrate the game and coach the viewer, but I have to master my voice before I can do that. And I got to get to know myself really well. And I think we're in a world where we want to help everybody, which is amazing. But I think we got to start individually of, what am I about? What are my core traits? And I do that every offseason. I do that every new year. And then try to dive back into my past so I can gain mastery over my craft, whatever that craft may be. And for me, it's my voice and my story and my pen and my fingers and my eye in college football. And that to me is the number one thing I try to tell everybody, is just get in touch with who you are and share it in the letter form, because you'll probably be surprised what comes up and what you've been through and how you got to where you were.
All right, so let me ask you this before you go. When you talk about coaches that lose their jobs, I mean, these guys understand. Coaches are a different breed altogether. They're wired differently. They work differently. They think differently. And they've got to know they're hired to be fired. But to your point, you often talk to them and say, hey, write it down. Write yourself a letter. Generally, what is the mindset and the reaction of a guy who just loses his job at that level?
Well, I think it's really interesting. You know, the first one is, I got to get the next job. Hey, I need to talk to this AD. I need to talk to this place.
Here's why? Because I'm going to fall out of the loop, or I need it for my own self-esteem and identity. Why is it so important to get that job right away?
I think it's both. I mean, think about it. You go from the high rise of the building in the penthouse suite to give me your keys.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't have Wi-Fi anymore. I mean, that's pretty much how it goes down. And especially in college football, I've always felt this college football, which I love with every ounce of my life, it is the smallest profession with the biggest ego. If with everyone involved, including myself. I mean, it doesn't really You have to. So that's process one is I got to get back in the game. I think step two is, whoa, like Bruce Arians the other day. My son's 40. I missed a lot of his life. Let me check myself here. Go spend time with the things that actually matter, because these fan bases really could care less about me. What really matters to me. And then it's getting centered.
Let me stop right there. And I love Bruce Arians. He's one of my favorite guys. Even he said, yeah, my son's 40 now, but I wouldn't change anything.
That follow-up line blew my mind.
Right.
Well, I think a lot of guys would say that. I've talked to coaches about that too, because it is a drug. You're basically an older player when you start coaching. And to me, it's always fun when coaches say it's about the players. You don't really say that until you're older in your career. When I started coaching at 23, it was about being at SC and winning games.
Right.
And the older coaches I was around, it was about getting the next job and then becoming a head coach and getting that next contract. And then when you get fired, then you reevaluate. You know, Coach Carroll and I wrote his book, Win Forever, and that was a big part of it, is when he was let go of, he was in New York City, it's a great story, and he gets sent out by the NFL to go to two practices. And he goes to one practice, and he doesn't hear a lot. And it's just like a whistle, it's line up here. And then he goes to another practice, and they're speaking Spanish the whole practice in a Spanish-speaking community. I think it was in the Bronx. And he heard the energy. Go da 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 da. And he walked out of that and said, it's about the energy that you create in practice. And practice is going to be everything in my next job. So it took him a minute to get out of the NFL to see 12-year-olds practicing and say, this is how I'm going to regroup and refocus the next time I have it, which is why I love when head coaches get their second opportunity. I can't wait to see if Mark Helfrich gets another opportunity. I can't wait to see some of these guys who have gotten let go, who didn't work out the first time. They were too stressed. They were too on top of all the details. And here they get a shot. Chip Kelly in college again.
Right.
I mean, there's some magical stories that are happening in the Pac-12 and around the country. And I think they get to reevaluate and take a year. I mean, if it was me and I was the commissioner of college football, if you get fired, you have to take a year off. You have to. You keep your insurance. We'll take care of your family, but you have to go do some work and get with some mentors, some people that have been around the game, and then come back and truly give back to the kids when you really want to do that.
Great advice. He is a Pac-12 football analyst, a filmmaker, a New York Times bestselling author. Yogi, it is so good to see you. Listen, if people listening right now maybe knew about you but didn't know this about you and they want more information, what is the best way for them to consume your content and find you?
Yeah, would you just go to yogiroth.com? It's got everything there, on Twitter at yogiroth, or Instagram or Facebook at yogiroth. I try to be multi-layer in that stuff. I got a great podcast coming out today with John Gordon, who you would love. He's a motivational speaker, 15-time national best-selling author around motivation and teams and coaching. So I'm just trying to drop into different forms of story. And when I get into 2018, to me, it's all about seeking. You know, seeking my best self and seeking to pull the best out of everyone I'm around. And that's going to kind of be my litmus test, my story, my theme throughout this year. So hopefully all the content's around that. So if you're interested in, let me know. If you don't like it, tell me I can get better. We're all coachable, so I appreciate the love.
It's a really, really good podcast, a tremendous platform. Yogi, I appreciate you, especially when you came up north to do the show. My first in-studio guest with a simulcast here. Man, you are about the right stuff. It is really good to see you, man. Thanks so much.
Congrats. I mean, are you kidding me, bro? How great are you?
Speaking of the Browns, Cleveland. Now, I know I spent a lot of time in the first part of the program talking about the TV show. I know I just spent a lot of time talking college football with Yogi Roth. Cleveland, I have not forgotten about you. Don't think that I can ever forget about you, because I was this close to opening up this show with what happened on Sunday. Not college football. Not Buffalo punching their first postseason ticket in 17 years. Not Jimmy Garoppolo and the Niners finishing their season on a 5-game heater. No, I'm talking about the final gift of 2017. I am talking about something glorious. I am talking about perfection.
Landry Jones takes the snap on fourth down, takes a knee. The ball game is over at Heinz Field. And the Browns join an 0-16 mark with the Detroit Lions of 2008 as they lose the final game of the season here at Heinz Field. The Steelers beat them by a score of 28-24. And what we started in September end now on the final day of 2017, and we do it all the way through without a win.
Yes, we did, and it was incredible. My thanks to Browns Radio. Look, I got to be honest with you. I was gripping hard. I thought the Browns were going to stab me in the heart yet again. That they'd chase 1-15 with another 1-15. That DeShone Kizer and Josh Gordon and Hugh Jackson would go out there against Landry Jones and the Steelers scout team and choke away their shot at immortality. That they would rob me of what I so richly deserve. Another perfect season. And even after getting off to that incredible start, Pittsburgh scored the first 14. They had an easy 21-7 lead. Man, you could just feel history start to wrap its hands around the Browns' necks as the moment got closer and closer to reality, because 21-7 soon became 21-14 when Kizer hit Rashad Higgins for a 56-yard TD. And then 21-14 became 21-21 when Kizer hit Higgins for another touchdown. And then even after Juju Smith-Schuster gave us some breathing room with that 96-yard house call, it all came down to one last drive. One last drive for the Browns, the 2017 version of the drive. Kizer gets it started with a nice easy throw to Duke Johnson. He converts 3rd-and-3 to the freak show that is Josh Gordon, who turned nothing into 33 yards. And then it's all there. History is on the line. 4th-and-2. One final scud that we have to dodge. Kizer, with the Steelers pass rush bearing down on him, spins out of trouble, rolls to his left, looks downfield, and there he is. Corey Coleman, wide ass open. And then Coleman goes legend when he manned freaking down.
4th-and-2 at the 27. Kizer back to pass. He's up in the pocket. He got out of a sack. He's running. He's throwing. It's caught at the 11-yard line. Now they're going to rule it incomplete. He dropped the ball over on the left sideline as he had a man wide open, and Coleman couldn't hang on to it at the 11, and the ball will go over to the Steelers.
Well, to play before, he couldn't line up in the right spot. This time, he couldn't bring the ball in.
And I cannot even begin to tell you how proud I am of this team. I mean, to get that close last year and see it all collapse in Week 16 and then to never even blink this season. And with the chips all in the middle and the Steelers pretty much openly tanking with their starters in bubble wrap and nothing to play for. When there was a chance to do something stupid, to go completely brain dead and make a play, to ruin everything that I've been hoping for, hell, everything I've been working for, there is Coleman making damn sure that there would be no mistakes this season, that we would roll into 2018 the right way. With the Cristal popping and the Browns, just the second team in the history of the NFL to run the table in reverse. Man, it was something. I can't tell you how many nights that I dreamed of that happening, but I always had to wonder. I always wondered, what would it feel like the second time? You know what people say, it's never as good as the first time. No matter what it is, when you do something amazing or something amazing happens to you, it's never as good the second time. I mean, it's kind of a whack explanation or a whack comparison, but even in horse racing, we won the Breeders' Cup twice. Was the second one as good as the first one? Absolutely not. Nothing's as good as the first one. So I wondered about this. If the Browns were to man down and run the table backwards, how would it feel the second time? I wasn't sure, but now that it's happened, I can answer the question. I can tell you I love this team. I love the Browns like I love the Lions team in 2008. And believe me, that crew will never have to buy a drink in the jungle ever again. I mean, that one had Rod Marinelli, my man, out front, his shovel sharp, his will outstanding, a true leader of men who guided Dan Orlovsky and Chaz Batch to the promised land. Yeah, I thought it would never be that good. Nothing could ever be that good. But then to see Coleman drop a ball that literally could have jammed right into his face mask if his hands didn't get in the way, it brought it all back. It brought back all those amazing feelings. And suddenly, it didn't feel like the first time. It felt better than the first time when I thought nothing ever would. Look, I know Cleveland that there are brighter days that are ahead, that maybe now they've got themselves a real GM in John Dorsey. I know they've got draft picks. I know they've got 2 of the first 4 picks. I know they've got 4 of the first 35. I know they've got a dump truck full of cash available for free agents. They've got one of the best salary cap situations in the NFL. I get all that. I know all that. Now, Cleveland, know this. No matter how good it gets, I will never, ever forget 2017. I will never, ever forget perfection. And even if Hugh Jackson is not running from this season, or is running from this season, I, for one, am not. There's a banner going up right now in this new studio. I'm just looking for the right place for it. Maybe on that brick wall to my right. Maybe on this brick wall to my left. I don't know where. I just know there's going to be a spot in this new studio for that banner. Because the second time feels even better than the first time. Way to man down. Way to show up and not make a play when you had to. Can you imagine how horrifying that would have been if he had made that play and they found a way to rip that one? Would have been the worst thing ever. I can't say how many days, weeks, months, literally years, I've been looking forward to being in this studio doing this show. However, if these guys find a way to choke and melt down and do it again, I'm not sure I get out of bed. I'm not sure I'm here for this. But luckily, it didn't happen. When they needed somebody to put the ball on the ground, Coleman did it. He put it in the ground. One email to set up hour number 3. This email reads, Buffalo, this is for you.
Cleveland, this is for you.
Regards, Andy Dalton. War Marvin Lewis going out and crushing 2 other playoff teams' hopes on top of his own teams. War the Jim Rome simulcast. Stephen Crowtown, who day since 95. Man, that is so true. To see the Bengals go out and do what they did. Buffalo, let me ask you this. Buffalo. I've got one question for you, Buffalo. How y'all living? How are you living? Bills Mafia, have you woken up from your dream yet? Because your long nightmare is now officially over because the Bills are in the playoffs. Let me say that again, because I've not been able to say that for 17 years. The Buffalo Bills are in the playoffs. Go ahead, take a moment. Take a moment and run down the list of coaches and players that you've seen in Buffalo during that stretch, that have been in Buffalo during that stretch. Sean McDermott was able to do what Greg Williams, Mike Mularkey, Dick Geron, Chan Gailey, Doug Marrone, and Rex Ryan could not do. Tyrod Taylor is going where Kyle Orton, Ryan Fitzpatrick, EJ Manuel, Trent Edwards, and Kelly Holcomb could never do with the Buffalo Bills. And even better is the fact that Kyle Williams, who has been with the Bills since 2006 and had never been to the playoffs, was at the center of everything. In the third quarter against Miami, he lines up as a fullback. He scores a 1-yard touchdown, his first TD since high school. However, and this is the best part about this whole thing, just beating Miami was not enough. The Bills had to get some help. And they needed help from the Cincinnati Bengals. In the NFL, you always want to be in control of your own destiny. But even worse than needing help is needing help from the Bengals. If you're banking on help from the Bengals, you know you're in trouble. Because the Bengals can't even help themselves, let alone anybody else. And it was looking bleak, right? Buffalo needed Cincinnati to beat Baltimore. Baltimore needed to win. So Cincinnati was doing exactly what you'd expect Cincinnati to do in a situation like that. They were losing to Baltimore. Down 27-24 with less than a minute to go. The Bengals had it 4th-and-12 from the 49 for Buffalo. And they were all watching it in the locker room. Bills fans were all in front of the TV. For Buffalo, it all came down to one single play.
Andy Dalton takes the snap, steps up, fires down the middle, complete at the 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Cincinnati. Tyler Boyd with a touchdown. No flags on the play, and disbelief has shrouded the stadium.
Oh, my gosh.
Ravens Radio, oh, my gosh. Andy Dalton to Tyler Boyd for a touchdown. The Bengals win, and the Bills are going to the playoffs. Incredible. I mean, absolutely incredible. And all the more incredible when you remember that back at the start of the season, people were accusing this Bills team of tanking. Remember when the team traded Sammy Watkins and Ronald Darby for draft picks, that they were mailing it in this year. But if that was the plan, and it wasn't, nobody told the players, and certainly nobody told the Bills Mafia. The Bills Mafia never mails in anything, and they sure as hell were not going to mail in an entire football season. Because nobody reps their city or their team harder than the Mafia, and nobody was going to tell them to just lay down this season. They didn't, and neither did their team. And speaking of those fans, if you haven't seen the video of the Bills fans watching the end of the Bengals-Ravens game and the moment that it all became real, then you need to check this out right now. Let me tell you something. I don't care if you're a Bills fan or not. If you can hear that and not get fired up by that, that's a you problem. That's not a Buffalo problem. That is a you problem. Oh, and how about the Bills Mafia? Not just celebrating hard, but donating hard to Andy Dalton's foundation as a thank you for the touchdown. Dalton tweeted out last night, quote, "In the 24 hours since the first donation came in, over 2,500 donors and just over 57,000 and counting. Last update for the night. I will update tomorrow. We can't thank y'all enough," end quote. I mean, so that's more than 57 GER and counting to benefit seriously ill and physically challenged kids and their families. Can I tell you something? That is beautiful. That is beautiful. Maybe the Bills fans do throw sex toys on the field. Allegedly. Yeah, that's my first allegedly on TV. That's my first allegedly in the new simulcast. Maybe they throw sex toys on the field. Allegedly. Maybe they break tables at tailgates. But the Bills Mafia, putting their money where their mouth is and thanking Dalton for ending the drought, is about as rich as it gets. So, my point in all of this is, if you're looking to come in here today and clown the city of Buffalo or clown their fans, that's a you problem too. Because I don't care how chilly or how overcast it is in Buffalo right now, that city has never looked brighter or shinier than it does right now, because the Buffalo Bills are in the playoffs. Go ahead and say that with me one more time. The Buffalo Bills are in the playoffs. The Bills are in the playoffs. Bills Mafia, where the hell are you? Where are you today? You know where to find me. 1-800-636-8686. You're in. I want to know how it feels. And are you at all concerned about just being happy to be there? Or now that you're in, can you do some damage? Can you wreck some house? Bills linebacker Lorenzo Alexander is my guest. Lorenzo, it's so good to have you back on. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. How you been doing?
Lorenzo, I'm great. I am really, really good, and it's so good to hear your voice. You know, I've talked about this countless times already on the program, but I want to say it one more time. Now that I've got you, Lorenzo, the Buffalo Bills are in the playoffs. How does it feel to hear that yourself?
I mean, it's a great feeling. I've been there before, but never obviously with this organization. And to be able to bring a playoff berth back to the city after 17 years is just is huge. You can just feel the energy around the city. The people are excited. The team and the organization is excited as well. And we're looking forward to preparing this week and playing the Jacksonville Jaguars on Sunday.
You know, you mentioned the fans. I would say this, Lorenzo. I mean, every team's fan base thinks that they're the best fan base, but the Bills Mafia is the only fan base that I reference when I talk to any player of a team. In other words, I'll mention it with Buffalo and nobody else. I've got to ask the question. We've seen all the reaction from the fans when Andy Dalton went up top and hit that big TD pass. But when you come home and it's late at night and it's, what, 2 degrees, 5 degrees?
Right.
And you see the Bills Mafia waiting for you, how does that feel as a player?
I mean, it's crazy. I mean, obviously, it shows that they appreciate what we're doing. We love it. That's just the type of support they've given us the whole time I've been here, you know, through thick and thin, the wins and the losses. But it, like you said, it was 1 degree outside. It was about 2,000 people out there to greet us, kids, babies, everybody, grandmas. I mean, they brought everybody out. And that's what this community is all about, you know, just supporting each other, and we really appreciate it. So it was just a great time, a great environment. and it was great to see Bills Mafia out there welcoming us back home.
Bills linebacker Lorenzo Alexander joining us once again. So take me inside the locker room after the game. You beat the Dolphins. You took care of your part of the deal, but you needed some help from the Bengals. So what was the mood like inside that locker room when you first saw what was happening in the Bengals-Ravens matchup?
Yeah, it was real reserved, quiet, tense. You know, obviously that last drive, the prior three plays, I think it was almost through two interceptions, you know, got sacked on a play, and we're looking at 4th and 12, and it's like, and then they had that big play, and you see the explosion going on. But at the same time, I think some of the guys realized it was still 45 seconds left on the clock. The Ravens still had 3 timeouts, and anything can happen. So I think, you know, after that explosion, guys kind of settled back down just to kind of make sure and confirm it. And after the game was over, it was another explosion. Another celebration in a sense, and it was just great, especially to be able to celebrate it with a guy like Kyle Williams and his kids that were in there. It was really a special moment.
Lorenzo Alexander, my guest. I'm glad you brought him up. He actually spoke to the team before the game. What was Kyle Williams' message to you guys before the game?
That this game was not about him, and that it was about the team and the organization and the community, and that we need to go out there and just lay it on the line. You know, a guy that's been around this league for so long and has never experienced the playoffs, for him to say that, I think it just shows the type of character he is, the type of person. And, you know, guys live and die as far as on the football field for a type of leader like that. So I think all the guys, especially around the league, respect him immensely. And that's just the type of person he is. So he's continued to lead us, continue to inspire us, and we're going to try to continue to go out there and keep this thing going.
You know, it seems like you and he also developed a certain chemistry almost from the moment that you arrived in Buffalo, and you hear his teammates talk about him the way you are right now, and it's not surprising at all. Now, when you and I spoke back in September, we talked about the thought outside of the locker room that maybe the organization was tanking, and you said you had a team loaded with professionals and guys who had never won championships so that nobody in that room would lie down. That said, how much pride do you take in the fact that it was this team, the team that everybody counted out earlier this year, was the one that snapped the drought?
I mean, it's a lot of pride there. I mean, obviously, like you said, everybody was counting us out. You tank it, you're not going to do this. You trade away all your players. You know, you don't have enough talent on that team to win. You don't have a quarterback. You don't have a defense. You don't have a secondary. And I think we stuck together. Guys continually stood up and made plays. Guys got hurt. Guys off practice squad, our free agency, you know, I think of guys that we signed, and they come in and make big plays. So it's just been great to see that. And the biggest thing, these are all great people, great character guys. And I think in the NFL that sometimes gets overshadowed by talent. But it just shows you, if you have a team that's working hard, staying together, sticking together through thick and thin, you can really overcome and surprise a lot of people.
So what about that? I mean, you can't win without talent, not at that level. But if you had your choice between a guy that had, you know, sufficient talent but great, great character, and a guy who had extreme talent but not as much character, which guy do you want to be in the trenches with?
Right. I mean, I think the biggest thing for me is I want the guy that's going to be consistent. I know what he's going to do each and every day, show up, work hard, and get the job done. Sometimes you have a talented guy, but you don't know what you're going to get. You can't trust him. And, you know, I think that's the biggest thing, a part of this league is trust and accountability.
Lorenzo Alexander joining us. All right, so the goal was never just to get to the playoffs. It was to win a ring. So how do you go about approaching this week to prepare for a wild card game?
I think you got to go business as usual. Obviously, you want to – the intensity, the noise, and all that's going to naturally step up. But you got to stay in your routine. Maybe do a – you know, you want to be a little bit more detailed. Just so when you're in the environment, you're able to quiet the noise because you're so much more confident in what your job is. But you don't have to go out there and try to do anything spectacular. Just do your job, and the spectacular or the big plays that you normally make will just come naturally. And just making sure all the guys kind of understand that, because I think sometimes in big games, big situations, you try to do too much and end up, you know, making a bust or not doing your job, and that leads to negative plays for us.
So as you start to think about Jacksonville, what concerns you the most about their offense, and how do you go about stopping them?
The biggest thing is their run game. I believe they're, you know, number one in the league as far as a rushing attack. You know, they really have, a plethora of backs. You know, everybody knows about Fournette and his mafia. Ivory and Yeldon, who I have a lot of respect for. I've played against them several times, good backs. And they're going to line up and play smash-mouth football. They're going to let you know, get 21 personnel, 22, 13, go big, and make you stop them, stop the run. Because obviously if they got the run game going, it opens up the play action for Bortles.
and we can't allow them to be two-dimensional. You know, really our goal each and every week is to stop the run and put them in third and long situations. And that's the hardest thing for, you know, most quarterbacks in this league to deal with. And then we've been doing a lot better with our front four rush, and that's kind of been our strength lately, and continue to affect the quarterback and our guys on the back end taking the ball away. And that's kind of been our key to the success, and I think that's why we're in this place that we are now.
Yeah, I guess Bortles on some level looks like a different kind of player right now. Lorenzo, he's played better. But essentially, are you looking to make him beat you? Is that the plan? Make him beat you?
Yeah, and that's each and every week. I don't necessarily know if it's Bortles per se, but we definitely want to take advantage of him. You know, with our front four rushing and our guys on the back end, it's kind of been our strength, kind of, you know, taking the ball away. We've been very advantageous all year, and if we can continue to do that, we're going to put ourselves in a position of where we can win the game.
We're talking to Lorenzo Alexander. One more thought. You have a head coach in Sean McDermott, and he was talking about changing the culture and creating a winning environment. He said, quote, "You wish you had more Lorenzos. What more could you say about an individual? He puts the team first," end quote. I got to ask you, like, how have you gone about trying to change that culture yourself? What was your approach?
It's just showing up to work each and every day and being the person that I am and trying to lead by example. I'm not a big rah-rah guy, speech guy. But I think guys, you know, from my experience and what I've seen and what I've really built into or bought into is when I see guys show up each and every day and are genuine who they are. You know, I think of guys like London Fletcher, James Thrash, Ronaldo Wynn, guys that were heart and souls of their teams in certain areas. But those guys showed up every single day and did the right things. And guys, you know, fell in line and followed them. And that's what I just try to do. I try to, you know, make sure everything is lining up. That I'm not just a guy just in the locker room, but also when I'm at home, when I'm out and about. So guys know that it's real and it's genuine, and hopefully they want to follow that lead. And obviously being in the league, you know, 13 years helps that cause as well. I must be doing something right.
Nobody even knows this guy except Alvin. That's how long it's been. Let's go to Houston. Poindexter, my man, is that really you?
Greetings from H-Town, home of the world champion Houston Astros. What's up, my man?
That is you. I know that voice. Poindexter, what's going on? How you living? What's
up? Man, it is so great to see you on the television, man. I was just trolling around the house, man, and looked up and seen your mug, and then I was like, oh, he's on the radio. And, you know, Dickie, he got to be rolling in his grave, man, because you're not on Houston. But, hey, we got Sean Pendergrass, you know. Yogi Roth, he was the bomb, man. I had a few takes on the college football games, but looks like y'all covered all of that. And for the Super Bowl, man, I'm looking for the Saints to do it again because half my family lives in Louisiana. And, man, last time they won the Super Bowl, we had a party that lasted like 3 months, man. I kid you not. We had to still had the same clothes on, man. And I'll give you some of my local flavor. The Texans finally found a quarterback, but they need to protect him. If you don't believe me, ask Derek Carr. And the Rockets, man, they had a winning streak that I thought was going to never quit. Then they had a losing streak that I thought was going to never quit. Now they rode James Harden till the wheels fell off last year. So they got Chris Paul to take some of the pressure off, but the man is made out of glass and tissue paper. Rome, it is so nice to talk to you, man. Shout out to all the legends. I hope they call in. Much love to you and Janet and Jake and Logan, man. And Lima time got to be smiling, man. World champion Houston Astros, I'm out.
Poindexter, my man. So good to hear your voice. Rick, you tell me what's up. How does it feel?
It feels great, Jim. Happy New Year to you and the crew. Coming off that historic holiday weekend for Western New York and Bills fans across North America, the first thing I got to do is thank the city of Buffalo's new favorite son, one Andrew Gregory Dalton, for dropping that 4th-and-12 dime against the Ravens. And when Tyler Boyd took it to the house, it sent the entire Bills Mafia into an all-out frenzy, the likes of which haven't been seen since that epic comeback against the Oilers 25 years ago. And the cherry on top of this delicious hot fudge sundae was seeing the stupefied look on John Harbaugh's face after it all went down. Being a complete crybaby must run in the Harbaugh family, this little Johnny boy was whining to the officials the entire game, and it was really pissing me off. But seeing the Bills post-game locker room celebration made everything worthwhile. And you gotta feel especially good for Kyle Williams, the longest tenured Bill, who's been a spark plug on the field and in the community for the last 12 years. And while the importance of ending the 17-year playoff drought can't be overstated, it isn't lost on anyone that Doug Marrone's waiting in the wings. Nobody around here has forgotten the bitch movie pulled on this franchise 3 years ago, and beating the Jags would be pretty sweet revenge. War Sean McDermott righting the ship after that midseason disaster. War the Cincinnati Bengals will forever be in your debt. Thanks for the vine, Jim. I'm out.
One down, about a million to go. You know the drill. We'll be right back here tomorrow. See you then. I'm out.